This morning I will be reading two passages, one from Jeremiah, the Old Testament, and one from Luke, in the New Testament. From Jeremiah chapter 29. This is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says to those who are carried into exile from Jerusalem to Babylon. Build houses and settle down. Plant gardens and eat what they produce. Marry and have sons and daughters. Find wives for your sons and give your daughters in marriage, so that they too may have sons and daughters. Increase in number there. Do not decrease. Also seek the peace and the prosperity of the city to which I have carried you into exile. Pray to the Lord for it, because if it prospers, you too will prosper. From Luke chapter 10. After this, the Lord appointed 72 others and sent them out two by two. That's 36 teams going out ahead of Jesus. They went ahead of him to every town and place where he was about to go. He told them, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into the harvest field. Go, I am sending you out like lambs among wolves." It's a good encouragement, isn't it? "Like lambs among wolves, do not take a purse or bag or sandals, and do not greet anyone on the road. When you enter a house, say, peace to this house." Or in Hebrew, I believe this would be, say, shalom. "If a man of peace is there, your peace will rest on him. If not, it will return to you. Stay in that house, eating and drinking whatever they give you, for the worker deserves his wages. Do not move around from house to house. When you enter a town and are welcomed, eat what is set before you. Heal the sick that are there and tell them the kingdom of God is near. But when you enter a town and are not welcomed, go into its streets and say, 'Even the dust of your town that sticks to our feet, we will wipe it off against you.' Yet be sure of this, the kingdom of God is near."
The Council of Churches in Lancaster County is really about people helping people. We have four core services now of food, clothing, transportation, and shelter. It's hard to argue across denominational and interfaith lines on those four basic human needs of food, clothing, transportation, and shelter. During the first week on the job, I met a man who had just wrapped up his first visit to the Council of Churches, and he was part of the Career Link program on coaching people up to interview for a job and seek employment to better their living situation. And we have the only PA Workwear, Pennsylvania Workwear clothing bank in the county. It's a state-run program. And he was provided with a suit, including a white shirt, a tie, a belt, shoes, whatever he needed for that interview phase of that program. And he said to me, "This is my first visit. I never had one here before." And then on a note, he wrote this word of thanks: "Never knew nice people still care for a stranger." Caring for the stranger, extending hospitality to those in need, is really at the heart of the gospel. And what is fascinating about our two texts that Chris read for us this morning, Jeremiah 29 and Luke 10, is that the point of view of each passage is from below. The people in Babylon were refugees, and that passage is from that perspective of being displaced, not at home, in a foreign land, foreign language. And the 70 that were sent out two by two were guests in the houses and the villages that they visited. It's from the ground level, from those who are living the story from below and not from above in a position of power. When Jerusalem fell in 587 BCE, there was utter disbelief. What Old Testament Walter Brueggemann calls the Jerusalem truth. And that Jerusalem truth had blinded the people of Israel because they could not hear any other possible scenario about what happens next. The Jerusalem truth, he says, was built on the assumption that we are God's most favored nation. We are safe and protected behind our sturdy walls of security. And no enemy can ever touch us. But then you'll recall in the book of Jeremiah that the word of the Lord came to this young man who did not want to be the spokesperson of Yahweh. When that call came, Jeremiah said to the Lord, "Ach, Lord God, truly I do not know how to speak, for I am only a boy." So there was resistance to his message, serious and sometimes violent resistance to this word of the Lord coming through the most unlikely of prophets. But he would say, Jeremiah would say, things are going to get rough. God's people will be taken captive. Many will be killed. The empire of this day, in this case, Babylon, would prevail. Well, this was unthinkable. No one wanted to hear this counter-narrative to the Jerusalem truth spoken by the priests and the custodians of the tradition. But we know that historically 587 BCE did happen. The walls were indeed breached in Jerusalem. There were people taken captive, people killed. And one of the most important questions in the midst of this desolation is, where is God? Where is God when things fall apart? When there is so much chaos? When we have done everything right in our minds, according to what we've been taught about living a godly life, and yet everything has gone so terribly wrong? Then what? Where is God? You may recall in Psalm 137 that the Babylonian captors mocked the refugees from Jerusalem in the refugee camps and asked them, "Where is your God? Sing us a song of Zion." And the sad reality was that the people of God, who once were so secure behind their walls, so secure in their faith inside the temple, so secure in their faith within the context of Jerusalem truth, now they were rendered mute. They said, "How can we sing the Lord's song in a foreign land?" That's a very formative text for us to wrestle with. How can we sing the Lord's song in a foreign land? How do we trust and reinvent our faith when all of the things around us that brought us to this point of faith have been challenged and compromised and shaken to its very foundation? Brueggemann argues that much of the Old Testament was in fact written during the Babylonian captivity. Isn't that fascinating? They had to rediscover their own story as God's people of faith. The story of the captive slaves who were once not a people and how God formed them into the people of God. They had to remember how those liberated slaves did not go directly from Egypt into the promised land, but instead into 40 years of wilderness wandering. They had to get brick making out of their system. And not all of that generation made it into the promised land. But they rediscovered that God was with them in the midst of that transitional liminal wilderness space. They had to come to really believe that God is, in fact, their refuge and strength, a very help in times of trouble. They had to rediscover that God was with them when all of the externals were taken away. And they were asking deeply, "Where is God?" They had to rediscover and trust that God was in the gray. So many of the people that we serve at the Council of Churches are in a long-term experience of displacement. One of the definitions of homelessness that has helped me understand this dynamic is this definition. Homelessness is a profound disconnectedness from self, family, and community. Let me say that again. Homelessness is a profound disconnectedness from self, family, and community. A lot of the people that come through our doors have burnt every bridge imaginable. Or they are like those refugees in Babylon, away from home, away from their comfort zone, away from employment, away from everything that gave them meaning and identity. And they have become dependent on those around them, at least in the short run. We also service returning prisoners, returning citizens. Profound disconnectedness from self, family, and community. So when we walk alongside and provide nutritious food or clothing or transportation or shelter, hopefully we're helping that person and that family reconnect with the sense of self, reconnect with their family, reconnect with their new community. And we want to be part of the long-term solutions, not just provide a band-aid in the short run. Sometimes that's necessary. But we also want to ask those deeper questions. Are we helping or enabling? These are the same questions that the Mayor's Commission to Combat Poverty are asking, and we're part of that conversation. For instance, we've found in empirical studies that it's so much more effective to provide housing to someone who is homeless than to manage them in the shelter system or the emergency room or the hospital or the county jail. I remember about 10 years ago reading an article written by Malcolm Gladwell, who followed a man named Murray Barr in the city of Reno, Nevada, as he bounced from the homeless shelter to the streets, to the jail, to the ER, to a treatment program, back to the shelter, and on this went for 10 years. Everybody in the city and the community and the service providers knew Murray. They loved him. And then he passed away after 10 years, and somebody added up what it cost the city to have him bounce around from all of those service-providing programs. It was $1 million. It's much more cost-effective to put somebody in a house and then bring the wraparound services to them than to try to get them ready for housing. And for a long time in this community, we were managing people in homelessness. Now we're trying to end homelessness and resolve this ongoing cycle. We've already reached the benchmark in Lancaster of ending veteran homelessness. We're just about ready to announce publicly that we've ended chronic homelessness. No other community in the United States has done that. It will be a big deal. You're getting a little glimpse of that reality. It's because we're asking different questions. Listen again to the radical word of the Lord that Jeremiah communicated to the captives in those refugee camps in Babylon. He did not say, "Hold on, help is on the way to get you out of this foreign land." It was not, keep to yourselves and don't be contaminated by this foreign element all around you. That's what they, I think, were anticipating. Instead, the word of the Lord was this: build houses and live in them, plant gardens and eat what they produce, take wives and have sons and daughters, take wives for your sons and give your daughters in marriage, that they may bear sons and daughters. Multiply there, do not decrease, but seek the welfare of the city where you are, for in its welfare is your welfare. Now, as people of faith, as Anabaptists, we have always said, love your enemies, pray for your persecutors. Here is one of the earliest Old Testament examples of loving your enemy, because it says, seek the welfare, the Hebrew word is shalom, as Chris said. Seek the shalom of the city where you are, and that was Babylon, who had ransacked Jerusalem, taken people captive, killed a lot of the family members in that refugee camp, and this is the word of the Lord. You see how radical that is. About being the people of God where you are, seeking the shalom of the city where you're residing, even though it is not the place where you hope to be. So Jeremiah says, settle in, you're going to be here for a while. And here's how I want you to be as my people in this place. Some years ago, I came across an article in the Mennonite Quarterly Review written by the late Dr. Robert Kreider. And I knew Bob from a number of different settings. He was president of Bluffton University when I was growing up, and my father worked there for 32 years, and it was Bob who brought my dad onto staff. He talks about growing up in Bluffton as a child in the late 1920s and early 30s, and he remembers two refugee families that were sponsored by First Mennonite Bluffton. They had fled some years before the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia and the subsequent Civil War. There was a famine in 1920s when Mennonite Central Committee was formed to help the Mennonites in Russia with their profound needs. So here it is in the late 1920s, somewhere around 28, 29, these two families arrive in Bluffton after spending a year in China in a refugee camp. And Robert remembered and recalled the criticism that people in the community were saying about these families who were so poor. Why did they have so many kids if they don't have any money? Why did the men smoke? Why were they so poorly dressed? And why was it taking them so long to learn English? I kept reading. I was really intrigued. And what was so transformative for me personally was the realization that I was reading about my grandparents and my four uncles and my aunt who was born in that refugee camp in China. And after they had got settled in and were farming some land owned by the university, my mother was born, the youngest of these six children, to refugee parents. First Mennonite became my home church. As we think about the thousands of refugees fleeing Syria and Somalia and the Democratic Republic of Congo just now, with a fairly small percentage actually coming to the U.S. and an even smaller percentage actually coming to Lancaster, how will we welcome them? What will be our narrative toward them? Will we be the nice people that care for the stranger? Or will we sit in judgment because of the things that we see and observe and make assumptions about? It's instructive that the Greek word for hospitality in the New Testament is philoxenos, a compound word. Philo, like Philadelphia, and xenos, xenophobia. Hospitality in the Greek language literally means brotherly love toward the stranger. Many of the refugees that come to Lancaster County will seek food and clothing from the Council of Churches. And just now, in partnership with Church World Service, a group of refugee women and their young children are taking ESL classes, English as a second language classes, and learning how to cook American food in our classroom that has a residential kitchen in it. They create something to eat, they learn English, and they build community. A couple weeks ago, the CWS staff called me into the classroom and said, these two women here knew each other 3 years ago in the refugee camp, lost track, and found each other here in this classroom. A reconnection through hospitality. We might help some of these refugee families with transportation. We have a Wheels to Work program where cars are donated to us, we get them inspected, we get them mechanically sound, and we sell them well below retail value to people who need to get to work. There's a fascinating article in today's paper, the front page article about affordable housing. I invite you to read that. We're part of that conversation. We know that refugees need advocates to help them navigate the system of where to live, where to find food, where to find work, where to find community. And this is a perfect segue into the second text that Chris read. One of my favorites, Luke 10 and the sending of the 70. And these 70 were the ordinary disciples. These weren't the super 12. These were ordinary men and women who Jesus had invited, gave them very brief orientation instructions, and said, go out to the towns and villages where I intend to go Pack light, stay focused on the urgent needs all around you, and begin extending the peace of God, the shalom of God, to those you meet. And let's assume that many, if not all, of these 70 were Jews living in the borderland communities of Galilee. And the further away you were from Jerusalem, the more suspect you were by the keepers of the temple tradition. They wanted to know up in Galilee, were you keeping the faith? Were you going to synagogue? Were you keeping kosher in your cooking? Were you avoiding those who were unclean? So not to put at risk your ability to worship. Jews in Galilee were surrounded by the other. Where was Jesus born? In Galilee. Surrounded by the other. And now he sends out his disciples, two by twos, in the towns and villages in Galilee, where he himself intended to go. So let's assume that some of those towns and villages where he himself intended to go included Samaritan and Gentile villages. So when you enter a town, it says, when you knock on the door of a stranger, you say, peace to this house. Shalom to you and your household. How radical is that? How reminiscent of an ancient story about refugees who were told to seek the welfare, the shalom of the city where you are. Make yourselves at home. Be the people of God where you are. And if you are invited in, you are the guest of this house. You eat what is set before you. Now let's think about that. If you're a Jew, you're now in a Samaritan home, eat what is set before you. What if it's not kosher? How radical is that? What was Jesus saying about those traditions of maintaining your sense of otherness of those who are different all around you? What is Jesus teaching us about hospitality and being a good guest in our host community? As churches in North America, you see, we're always assuming that our starting point is of the host. Come and see what we do here. Come and take part in our program and come be part of us here on our turf where we are comfortable and we know all the hidden rules. Thankfully, Chris told me some of those, like I could sit down there and not have to sit up here. That was helpful. And how the transitions happen. You see, there's a lot of things that happen here week after week that you all know the hidden rules about. But what if we as people of faith in North America in the year 2016, what if we would reframe our starting point as, what does it mean for Whitmer Heights to be a good guest in its host community? How would that change how we interact with people in the CB school district or in Leola? And I've been attending the CB ministerium, so that's how Pastor Randy and I worked out this invitation so that he could be on vacation on Father's Day. And I have to work. I mean, there's no free lunch, but I was glad to do it. But I sit with pastors in this ministerium, and you talk about Homes of Hope and the youth ministry, and there's a lot of good things going on. The connection with the school social worker, Katie Reif, who I happen to know, her whole family. What does it mean for you to be a part of that? 3 years ago, I'll end with this story. 3 years ago, I met a man named Joe through Homes of Hope. And I know that you have Homes of Hope, Leola. And Pastor Sue Orth at the Lutheran Church is a very good friend of mine. I helped start the Homes of Hope in Ephrata 12 years ago, chaired that board for 10 years, but also signed up to be a mentor. I thought it's one thing to sit at the board level. It's another thing to be a mentor in the day-to-day realities of that program. So Joe was, and his two teenage kids were, I think, the fourth family that I mentored. He was a single dad, truck driver, who had lost his commercial driver's license, his CDL. And as a result, lost his job, and then he lost his home. So Stephanie and Joey, who were then 17 and 16, moved into the Homes of Hope apartment on Main Street of Ephrata, and I was their mentor. And when I met with Joe, because of the steps, they were on the second floor of this home, he and I often met out on the porch. Porches are liminal spaces. They are transitional places between public and private, right? Porch is attached to the house, but it's open to the public. And so somebody can come up onto your porch, could be a friend or a stranger. They may knock on your door, and you may or may not let them in, depending on your judgment of whether they're bringing peace or something else. They might be soliciting something. They could be the guys in the white shirts and the black ties that have a brochure that they really urgently want to give to you. So Joe and I sat on the porch, and this time I decided to get to know this client in Homes of Hope as a person. What was his story growing up in New Jersey? How did he get to where he is now? Tell me about your kids. We got around to the details of the program, but we also developed a friendship, and that friendship has endured. Eventually, Joe found a job here in Lancaster, and he had a car, but it was time for inspection, and as often happens, he took that car to get inspected, and the repairs were going to be more than what the car was worth. So Joe and I went to this amazing program called Wheels to Work at the Council of Churches. I wasn't there yet. And through what he had saved up and a microloan from a local church, Joe got a minivan that was sound enough to get him to work. A few months later, Joe found an apartment through a Mennonite landlord, the only person who would rent to somebody exiting homelessness with bad credit. But the landlord said to me, Joe has people. He has you. He has Tabor Community Services and the caseworker there who was helping to find apartments, and Beth from Homes of Hope, the social worker. Having people made the difference. Having people opened the doors for Joe to find an apartment so that he and Stephanie could move out of that temporary transitional housing into his own apartment. So we helped them move. We found furniture in the furniture bank and unloaded the storage locker that he had been keeping all these months. And Joe and I kept in touch. Then in April of 2014, about a year and a half later, Joe called to say that he and the kids were being evicted on Good Friday. Now, as a pastor, Easter weekend tends to be fairly busy. I think you can appreciate that. But homelessness knows no holidays. Homelessness happens at the worst times on a good day. Long story short, we helped Joe file for his veterans benefits. And as often happens with Joe's bad luck, he said to me once, Jim, if I didn't have bad luck, I wouldn't have any luck at all. We fill out all of the paperwork online to file for his veterans benefits during the Vietnam era, and then we get this note back that says, sorry, all of those records from 1973 were lost in a fire. You've got to reapply to St. Louis. So Joe came back on Easter weekend Saturday, and we filled out all of the information again, and that was successful. He moved, he and Joey, into Transitional Living Center in downtown Lancaster. I got him connected to the Veterans Hospital in Lebanon. The social worker happens to be a member of Akron Mennonite Church. He was there for about 5 or 6 months. Stephanie stayed with a friend in Ephrata because she already had a job. And a few months later, Joe told me that he found a fellow veteran in Ephrata who would rent to him. And I'd gone with him to several apartment visits, and nobody would rent to him because there were 5 other people looking to rent, and they had good credit. You see the challenges. When things spiral out of control and you've got bad credit and you've become homeless twice, who's going to take a risk on you? Things were cruising along. Joe filed for disability after some episodes of driving truck again. And now he's got a part-time job working at Walmart. Lost his driver's license because of being homeless. He didn't renew his registration, which meant if you don't have your registration, they take the license plate back. If you don't have that, they take your license. These things happen. And yet, all in all, things were... Stephanie, Joey, Joe, all living in this house on... in Ephrata, two blocks from his older daughter and their kids and his grandkids. And then on May 14th of this year, 2 a.m. on Saturday, I get a call from Joe. Daughter Stephanie had been killed in a car accident. She died just before midnight on Friday the 13th. Every parent's worst nightmare. I was the closest thing to a pastor that this family knew, so I showed up. And in that space, there's no words, there's nothing you can say or do, you just show up. And by the next morning, we said, we'll figure this out. They asked if I would do the service. They asked, could we have it at Akron Mennonite? I said, I'm not pastor there anymore. But my co-mentor is still a member. He made a couple phone calls. He made a request on that next Sunday morning, the next day on the 15th of May. And you know what? Akron said, yes, we get the connection. We understand the need for this community funeral. We'll make room. We'll be hospitable. Over 200 people were there. Joe's extended family from New Jersey, but mostly young adults, classmates and co-workers and friends of Stephanie. What impressed me was that we at Akron Mennonite made room on our porch for a family that we had gotten to know on their porch. When I showed up at Joe's apartment or his house, I was a guest. And now we were able to reciprocate. None of that was scripted when I signed up to be Joe's mentor. I simply want to share with you that when you take that risk of getting out of your orbit that you are comfortable with and walk with somebody who's a refugee, walk with somebody who's a returning citizen coming out of prison, walking with somebody who's been homeless, it will change you. It's messy. You will need to learn how to grieve because you cannot fix this by prayer and a check. It's about relationships. You've got to show up and you've got to take those inconvenient calls on Good Friday saying, hey, I'm being evicted. Can I borrow your pickup? Or the calls at 2 a.m. But when we do that, and I suspect that you here at Whitmer Heights have done this, through Homes of Hope, through CVCCS. And again, be assured that CVCCS, we know the folks there. We help each other. It's not a competition. There's more need for food and clothing and what we provide than there is resources. Are you hearing me on that? It's not a competition with the Council of Churches. I do want to extend an invitation to have you prayerfully consider taking part of the volunteering through the winter shelter that we do at the YWCA. We provide the only emergency winter shelter in the cold weather months through the Council of Churches in partnership with the YW. We need 80 volunteers on a given week, 12 people each night. You can split that week with another congregation. All of the weeks are already subscribed by partner churches except for two. Direct client contact is what you'll encounter. People who are coming in with no other place to sleep on a winter night. Will you understand everything? Probably not, because I still don't. But we on staff have taken the burden of checking people in. Somebody's got to be the gatekeeper, because there are basic expectations for even an emergency shelter. But we do that as staff. We ask you to be hosts, to get them settled in, to get them connected to the showers and the towels and the blankets and the bunks in the gymnasium of the Council of Churches that we supply at the YW. But it makes a difference when you come face to face with that reality happening right here in our community. So what we learn here from these two stories is being a good guest in our host community, having the perspective that God is in this wilderness space of disconnectedness. But when we partner together with others, The kingdom of God has come near. Shalom has come near. Peace to this house. Healing to this house has come near. That, I believe, is our calling, our mission. And part of how we express our gratitude to God. May it be so for us. Amen.